It's cool to be here. So, this was a master's thesis that I completed at the end of last year. So it's just starting to be published and writing a paper, as JJ said, to go out. Just trying to work out where to go, where's the best journal. And this is the first time I'm a bit nervous. This is the first time that I've presented to a like diverse gender community. Most of the people that I've been presenting these findings to date are cisgender university polytech staff members. So this is like a whole new experience for me, and I'm really looking forward to what your kind of feedback, ideas, questions are. So I thought the first thing to let you know is like, who am I? Because this played a really big part in my research, the development of it, the thinking about it. It was quite an important part of it. So I'm a gay, I tend to say queer cis woman. I'm not quite sure why I wrote gay this afternoon. That was quite interesting, but either one works. She, her pronouns. I am a social justice activist ally, have been for 148, so maybe 35 years, I don't know. Lots of different areas, but working in alliance with people has always been like it's one of my core values, whether it's treaty work, whether it's breastfeeding, whether it like whatever it is, that's kind of been my life, is to focus on social justice. I teach at Unitech around social justice, human rights, advocacy for social workers, youth workers, health promoters, that's kind of my field. And I also am one of the founding members of the Ally Network that we're coming to do for the Auckland University Students Association on Saturday. Coming back. So feel free to, you know, come. I don't know if you're allowed to, but you know, whatever. Yeah, say Kathy said. Say Kathy said. Yeah, I'll be back on Saturday. So just to give you a bit of an idea about the research, it was a qualitative study. I used purposeful sampling, so I was very specific about requesting that people who self-identified as diverse gender, whatever identity that was, were the people that I was interested in for the study. And I did semi-structured interviews, so about I think the shortest interview was just over an hour, the longest was about 2 hours, so it kind of went. And I just travelled around the country and met with people. Very lucky that I got a scholarship that kind of let me get on planes and travel around New Zealand. I tried to get them to let me do it in, you know, England, Fiji, but no, just New Zealand, that was it. And then I used thematic analysis, so I looked at what the data was saying, and then I found themes in them. So I didn't go with an idea of what I was going to find. I was very wanting to stay open-minded. So just because one of my challenges is to stay on track and focus, there's so much stuff that I could say about this research. I thought I'd just give you a sample of what I'm actually going to cover today. So I just want to talk about what discrimination that was reported as being experienced, strategies to normalise diverse gender identities, so that's kind of the two main areas that were covered, and then also what my study conclusions were and recommendations were. So it just kind of gives you a bit of a sense of what the study covered. So I really liked the question about what was surprising, because people often ask me that question, what was surprising. So I interviewed 7 people because it was a master's study. I'm kind of in awe of Hannah's 101 people because 7 was a lot. And when you start looking at all the data analysis, but I asked the specific question, do you experience discrimination in tertiary? So I was looking for students that were either current students or very recent students. It ended up that everybody was current students. And the question was, do you experience discrimination? I didn't identify what I meant by discrimination. I did that on purpose. I just wanted it to be open. And what really surprised me was 6 out of 7 people said no, they didn't. And I was like, that's surprising. And as we go on a few, as we go through it, I'll kind of unpack that a bit. But that was kind of like my takeaway, like, wow, actually, that was like the initial reaction to that question. However, Discrimination is definitely happening in tertiary. I'm just aware of speaking to people that are really aware of this and not wanting to kind of put my spin on it. So one of the things that was really important to me was to hear the voice of diverse gender people, particularly, as I mentioned before, like being a cis woman, I was very aware of how do I make sure that I'm not looking through this kind of cis normative lens when I'm listening to stuff. So a lot of my thesis is like the voice of the participants. So this was one participant that said, when I asked, do you experience discrimination? They were like really clear, yes, I do. But this quote really encompassed actually what all of the participants were experiencing. It was just that they didn't say it quite like this. And so this participant said it's silent. The discrimination is silent. It's invasive. The minute you're not heard or you're not represented, that is when this invisible discrimination starts to happen. And there is no more insidious discrimination than people forgetting you're there. Not like just some of these, well, a lot of the quotes, but it's just like that really hits me. Is like, how do you even manage invisible discrimination? Like for somebody like me that's working to create change in society. So then there were some other quotes around like people describing everyday stuff. So although participants said, no, I don't experience discrimination, like when we talked later, there were lots of things that came out around the day-to-day challenges. And so this participant was talking about, if I'm stressed out, it makes it very easy for me to be triggered by something that comes up about my gender or past issues. Like going to the bathroom is a specific problem. We were talking about that before we started. Occasionally I'll be really stressed out and need to go to the bathroom, so I'll look for the closest to find that they're gendered. There's one bathroom at uni that I found that's a non-gender bathroom. It's just a bathroom and they've got locked doors, little individual rooms basically, which is perfect. But there's only one of them and it's quite far away. Now, for people with diverse gender, this is not new information, but when you present this quote to cisgender people that haven't even thought about this, it's massive. Because, you know, not to give you too much personal information, but I use the bathroom several times a day. And like the idea of having to think about that every single time and manage that and all the energy that goes into managing that, like for people that have never thought about that, that's just like mind-blowing that this is happening, and it's happening to their students in their classroom. And then, you know, from a teacher's perspective, lecturer, facilitator, whatever term you want to use, I'm like, actually, I think I've got some important conversations to facilitate in this room. I'd really like people to be present, not having to think about this all the time, the energy that it takes. And that came up a lot, the energy that it takes just to move through the day, really. And then there was one more quote around something that came up with the themes of discrimination was hypervigilance and this idea of creating support networks, that there were quite a few of the participants that talked about these support networks that they had created, but also this constantly being on high alert seemed to come through a lot. And so this is talking about, I don't know if you do this here, but like there's a role that goes around that you have to sign. Okay. So the role got passed around to sign it so that we know that they know that we've been there, because there's a lot of students, and usually I sit next to them. So this is a participant that was talking about a friend of theirs that's diverse gender, has a diverse gender identity, and says every time that role comes around, it's always wrong. It's always under the name that they're registered under, not their preferred name. And I've taken to getting it before they do, erasing it as much as I can, and writing it incorrectly, and making a note for them to please change it, then passing it on. They appreciate it because it's literally every time we go to the workshop, and they shouldn't have to deal with that. So it's like just that one quote, you can kind of unpack that quite a lot around not only the their friend that they're talking about, but that constantly, like working out where you sit so that you get the role first, so that you know, making sure that you're scrubbing it out so that they don't have to see that name in front of them. And it's just like, this is so messed up that students are having to do this before they can even start the class. So there were two main sections to the research. One was looking at, like, does discrimination occur? And if it does, what kinds of discrimination occurs? And so what came through was the themes with is that, yes, discrimination does occur. And there were, I kind of lumped them into three main themes. So there was gender normativity, so this idea that that there's male and female and it's a binary system and, you know, everything's structured around that. Plus administration processes. So before you've even arrived, you're asked what your gender is. There's often only two boxes. Everywhere you go, there's like, what's your legal, you know, we have to have your legal name, all of those admin processes that are set based on a gender binary. And also the lack of staff awareness. So all of the participants had like someone that was like knew about diverse gender people, but it was like one person and they thought it was amazing that they had that one person. So that in general, it was like there's a lot of staff awareness building that's needed. And what came through really clearly was this idea of minority stress. And so when you put together all of these day-to-day things, then that creates this minority stress. I don't want to be talking to the... Do you know about minority stress? It's like, yeah. Yeah. So it's like if you are a minority, that the constant being able to... having to manage how you interact with the world that's not set up for you creates a lot of stress. And so that was one of my strong kind of statements in the findings, was that all of these... I'm not a psychologist, but I say... all of these participants were experiencing minority stress just from their stories and talking to them for a couple of hours. So that was kind of like the findings around discrimination. And it matched up with all of the literature that says diverse gender people experience discrimination. What we didn't have in New Zealand was any research that said, do diverse gender students experience discrimination in tertiary? So this is, I'm hoping that this can become like a kind of thing that people can add to the pot to say, actually, there is now research that says that tertiary students do experience discrimination based on their gender identity. And then once Hannah comes out with her 100 people, oh, yes! And it was quite interesting to like see the connection, actually, between what I found with 7 and what you found with 100. So that's, yeah, there's like some common themes there emerging. I had this moment when I was doing the analysis of the data. I did the interviews over a 3-month period in the summer. What year are we in? 17, 16. So like a beginning of 2016. And then I spent the rest of the year like writing it all up. And I found like when I was looking through the transcripts and I was coding them and putting them all into files, piles and things, the discrimination stuff was quite, it was really hard going. It was like working through sludge. I was like trying to put all this together, honour the voices of the people. How am I going to present this in a way that is respectful but also lets people know what's really going on? And I just had this like flash one moment when I was looking at all the strategies and things that people, that the participants had developed. And it was like, okay, so actually I went looking for discrimination, but what I found in the participants was this resilience, this amazing resilience to manage being a minority that's invisible. It was this aha moment for me around this is not a community, and again, this is not new news to you, but it was kind of it strengthened a belief in me, like this is not a community that need help. This is a really strong community that have got resilience, and there's social and cultural systems in place that don't work, that needs to be changed. So it was this whole working from a strengths-based place, which is where I work. I'm a community worker, youth worker. We all work from strengths-based. But when I was looking at the findings, one of the things that I asked the participants was, what would you like to have happen, or what happens that works for you around creating inclusive environments? And three main things came up. One was education for staff would be really useful. The other one was policies and practices and processes that reflected gender diversity in their language, and that people actually took action. So it wasn't just about putting things in policy. It wasn't just about going to a workshop. It was that people actually did stuff. And I thought that overall, if all of those things happened, there would be authentic inclusion. Now, it's quite interesting, my thinking changes. I don't tend to stay in one place very long, so my thinking has already changed since I've done this, from the idea of authentic inclusion to actually normalising. So at the beginning of this process, I started looking for how do we make inclusive environments? And as I started reading, I started to think, hold on, including into what? And doesn't that make like diverse gender people and other? If we're saying, oh, we're going to bring these gender diverse people into the norms and we're going to include them. And so whilst that was my thinking at the beginning, now I'm very much at the point of actually, I don't want inclusion anymore. I want normalisation of diversity. So that to me would be about this recognition that there is gender diversity rather than, you know, we're going to change our norms to include you, which is kind of what the word inclusion implies to me a bit. So I'm a work in progress, what can I say? Any questions so far? Yeah.
Did your participants talk to that inclusion normalisation thing at all?
No, they didn't. That's more been afterwards. Yeah. And just doing some more reading and things. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I spend quite a lot of time like thinking about how to do that, and how to, like, how I started was like trans with a star asterisk to kind of go, okay, you know, like, so there's all these different things. The reason that I came with diverse gender was because I wanted to include people that identified as genderqueer, gender fluid, potentially intersex, although it didn't end up, there wasn't any intersex participants, but I kind of wanted a term that I felt would be the most inclusive. Whether that worked or not, I don't know, but that was my thinking behind it, yeah. Have you any thoughts about that?
Not yet.
Okay. So out of this, there were four main conclusions and recommendations that I came up with. So the first finding, like grouped together, was about students experiencing minority stress and the personal strategies they've developed. So I talked about that. So the conclusion that I presented was that diverse gender students are increasingly expect to be included. And so that's kind of backed up by the literature, that there is this, everybody that I spoke to expected to be included. Like there wasn't we shouldn't be. It was very much this, a general assumption, of course I should be included. So that's kind of, it seems like quite obvious, but I thought it was important to say it. Then my recommendation related to that was that tertiary providers recognise the impact that gender norms have on diverse gender students. So this was to do with the education stuff, that actually a lot of the people that I work with and have worked with in lots of different places, it doesn't occur to them because it's not part of their life. And so that actually, how do we challenge that cis normativity or the gender norms? Like, how do we do that? And that's some of the unconscious bias work that's happening in lots of different areas. The second one was about lack of diversity education for staff, so this links, lack of staff awareness. That tertiary providers deliver educational programs for staff that support the active creation of inclusive environments for diverse gender students. Again, I changed the wording now, but you get the point. It's about being active and working in alliance so that it's not diverse gender people that have to do this work, that actually it's the people in positions of power that are doing the work. The next one was about gender normativity and the lack of visibility of diverse gender identities in policies and processes. And that was just to state that the gender norms are reinforced in all the systems and all of the curricula. My recommendation is that institutions investigate policies, processes and curricula to ascertain areas where diverse gender identities require inclusion. And I know there's some work being done around curricula and in Australia, if not here, just to kind of, there's just so much that needs to be done. And then the fourth one was about the perceived lack of support from staff for the diverse gender community. Now, I haven't talked about this yet, but it came through quite strongly in the findings that the participants had the sense that they weren't a priority. It wasn't that people didn't care, it was just that they didn't see the importance of changing processes, of changing bathroom signage, of like they were like, yeah, we'll get to it. And that they just really felt that they weren't a priority to people. And that just fed that sense of invisibility and exclusion, really, isolation. And so there really is a lack of research about best practice. In New Zealand, Australia, there's a big gap in the literature. And my recommendation around that was to actually be supporting gender diverse people to do this education, to do this research, if that was what they wanted to do. It was one of my questions at the beginning, was why am I doing this? Like, I don't want to be somebody from the outside, you know, another cis person, you know, looking in on the diverse gender community and, you know, going, ooh, look at that. That was my real fear. But the message that I got, I had a consultation group that were diverse gender people that supported me in the development and design. And their message was, just do it. Like, we need stuff out there. There isn't enough. You know, we're not at that point yet. It's okay. Just, if you've got the energy and you've got the interest in this, then do it and get it out there. But I think that it's, my advocacy is around scholarships so people can be researching their own community. There's value in people from outside doing it as well, but I think that there's more value in people doing it from within. So I called this thesis a place to stand, and it was very much like that place of where I can stand. It was recognising in New Zealand that sense of who we are and that I have the right to stand here and be me. And so whether you're like looking at this in tertiary, for people to actually be able to be themselves in the tertiary environment and not have to manage all of that stuff. And that my kind of passion is to really be looking at how do we normalise this range of gender identities in society, because it will benefit the world, according to Kathy, it will benefit everybody. Like, you can't break down gender norms and it not benefit the people that are oppressed by it, as well as diverse genders. So it's not a, you know, people say it's 4%, but if you work on looking after that 4%, it will ripple out. Like, there's no doubt. So I think it's really time to be normalising that as much as we can. That is everything I have to say.